After getting his start on Blue Collar TV and Blue Collar Comedy Tour, Bill Engvall went on to star and produce the TBS sitcom The Bill Engvall Show and host Country Fried Home Videos, one of the highest rated shows on CMT. This weekend, he'll be coming to the Colonial Theater in Pittsfield for two shows, one at 7:30, one at 9:30, and it's a great pleasure to welcome him to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. Appreciate it.
Well, Joe, thank you very much. I got one bone to pick with you.
Oh, go ahead.
All right, so I called the main number here, and the lady who does the recording,
yes,
does the one thing that drives me crazy, because she sounds just real enough, like you're not sure if it's not a live person.
Yeah.
And then she puts this pause in, like she goes, "Thank you for calling WAMC. If you know your party, you know." So and you want to, and so you go, "Hi," and they'll say, "I've got."
Yeah, I'll own up to that. I know that happens.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because you know what's so funny about it is it makes you mad, because I do that on my phone to people. I'll go, "Hello," and then I'll wait and I'll go, "I'm not in right now." And you can hear them go, "Damn it!"
Because your thought. You had a person.
Yeah.
And that's
All
you want in life is that person.
Yep.
Man, it's great to have you come into the region. It's always nice to see you here. And is this part of a grand summer tour, or is it just sort of the normal get out and about?
I've been on tour since 1982. So it's like,
right.
You know, and I say that jokingly, but unlike a band, you know, they go on tour for 6 months and they take 6 months off. Comedians pretty much are on the tour year-round just because... Hey, you know, like in my style of comedy, you know, it's all very observational. And so, you know, I'm writing all the time. So it's not like a band has to go into a studio and come up with songs. You know, I see stuff just, you know, just like what we just talked about, just with like the recording or, you know, like I started laughing the other day because I was watching the Olympics and there's a big scandal now, but it's with badminton. And I'm like, does anybody really care? You know, that's, you know, it's like that's like saying we have a scandal in beanbag toss to me. You know, it's like,
if you're going to be nefarious, should you do it in regards to badminton?
Yeah, you know, if you meet a badminton player that's on steroids, write it down, because you know that's.
When you talk about that observational humor, and is it that natural style that allows you to, A, communicate with an audience, and be able to do it? I mean, you're coming in, you're doing two shows. To be
right.
Able to sustain that.
I think so, Joe. You know, I think if I had to look back over my career of 31 years of doing this, I think the thing that has kept me at the top of my game is, A, it's a clean show. And B, that I don't talk about stuff that I don't know about. You know, like Leno told me one time a long time ago, he goes, never do jokes about stuff you don't know about. Like, it'd be stupid for me to do fat jokes because I'm not fat, or to do drug jokes. You know, it's like, and so, and I think that's where comedians get in trouble, is that they try to cover too many. You know, listen, I look at it this way. I don't do political stuff. I don't do religious stuff, because you get bombarded with that throughout the day. And I figured there's plenty of stuff out there that's funny that is not going to, you know, because if you start doing political and religious stuff, already you've eliminated 50% of your audience.
Yeah.
Because either way, either, you know, they just because of their beliefs. And so I, you know, my whole career has been made pretty much talking about being a dad and, you know, going through life. And now the show that I'm bringing in there to Pittsfield is, it's dealing with me getting older and, you know, being my wife and I being empty nesters now. And so, you know, it's that kind of stuff. I was telling my wife, I turned 55 last week, and I was fine with it till I realized that I now qualify for the senior open at my country club.
Puts it into a new perspective.
Yeah, I said, what's next, a red flag on my golf cart so I can drive right up to the green?
You know, not to bring us to a somber note here, but I'm interested in your selection of material, because you look at comedians who are making headlines now, Dane Cook and
right.
Daniel Tosh and others who making jokes about what happened in Colorado or commenting on what about rape and coming under fire for those statements. Obviously, not something that you would do or would be comfortable doing, but do you understand why, as a comedian, why they would want to do that before an audience?
You know what, Joe? That's a great question. here's my theory on it. I think at some point in everybody's career, you become you get to a level where you think you're immune from stuff, and that you can say whatever you want. And I just don't buy into that. I don't like and it's just not my style. I guess you could say their argument would be, hey, it's newsworthy, but I just, you know, making fun of people's pain is just not, I just don't find that funny. I think if you look at who you're talking about, you're looking at a younger comedians who, you know, they feel like, you know, the brasher the better. And you know, I got to tell you something. I may sound like an old fogey here, but when I started this career, I looked at two guys. I looked at Bob Newhart and I looked at Bill Cosby. And I said, what's the common denominator? And the one was that they work clean and that they avoided stuff like that. And guess what? They've been working for 40, 50 years.
Yeah.
Dane Cook and Daniel Tosh are very funny. Do I see a longevity there? Probably not. Because I just feel like overall, I don't think that people, I look at it this way. What if it was one of my friends or my family that was sitting in that movie theater? Would I find that stuff funny?
Right.
And I just don't think I don't think you need to do it. I understand why they do it, but I just don't think you need to do it. I think it's, there's being edgy and current, but then there's being like, all right, are you being disrespectful now?
And you know, what's funny, and having had the great pleasure of having Bob Newhart on the show, is that when he started out in the late 50s, early 1960s, the material that he was doing of having an ad agency talk to Abraham Lincoln about his image was edgy.
Right. But, oh, yeah.
But now it is universally funny, and it's as funny now as it was 40, 50 years ago when it was recorded.
Well, yeah, you know, and listen, I look at stuff like that, you know, so I get it, but, you know, it's like, I tell you a Daniel Tosh story is that, you know, he saw that Tosh 2.0 or whatever, but there was something about a here's your sign, you know, like a sign, he goes, this is how I hope Bill Engvall dies. Now, I know he was joking, but it's just like, do you need to go there?
Yeah.
You know, I always live by that phrase, be careful what you say about someone because it may be the last thing that you say, and you don't want that to be. And I taught that to my kids too. You know, it's like be careful how you talk to people. And I'm not saying you got to be Pollyanna. I'm not, you know, that. But I just think there's lines that personally I don't cross, and I think that's why I'm now being able to come into a place like Pittsburgh and do two shows that are going to probably be sold out, and because people know they can bring their grandmother or their mother or their kids. And like I said, I'm not Disney on Ice. I'm not trying to fool anybody. But my show is clean. I don't cuss in it. You know, we talk about, like, I'll give you an example. I went to, and this is when I talk about current event stuff. I went to my doctor because I was having trouble sleeping. You know, with the TV show stuff going on, I've got three shows that I'm trying to get sold. And,
right.
You know, just, and then also, you know, getting older and dealing with stuff. So I went to my doctor and I said, hey, can you prescribe me something to help me sleep at night? And he said, Bill, he goes, I really don't like prescribing pills. And he said, have you tried Ambien? I said, yes, I tried Ambien. And then I woke up one morning and I was fully dressed window shopping in Park City, Utah. And I don't remember doing that. And so all of a sudden he goes, well, have you tried medical marijuana? And I said, I've never even tried unmedical marijuana. And you know, he said, well, I'm going to write you this card and I want you to go to this dispensary. Well, I'm thinking it's going to be like a Rite Aid or, you know, Walgreens. You know, there's people in white jackets that you hand them your prescription. You come back in an hour. There's your medicine. It was like being backstage at a Grateful Dead concert. It's like, Joe, have you ever walked into a bar and the minute you walked in, you realized you didn't belong there?
Oh, yeah.
But you couldn't turn around and run out fast enough? This kid comes up to me, and Joe, I wish I was making up this voice, but he goes, well, hello, my friend. He goes, are you a newbie? And I said, no, I'm an Engvall. And he goes, no, dude, are you a newbie to marijuana? And I said, yeah. And he goes, well, welcome to Shangri-La. And I was just like, oh, my God. I go, and so I went through this whole thing, and I, you know, I couldn't tell my wife about this because she wouldn't even let me go backstage at a Willie Nelson concert. So I bought whatever the doctor told me to get. And so I'm down in the basement, and I'm trying to roll this joint, but I've never rolled a joint in my life. So I'm recalling on movies like Cheech and Chong, and I'm trying to remember how they did it. And it was somewhere between a Cheech and Chong movie and a John Wayne movie when he would just roll the tobacco with one hand. And Joe, it looked, when I got done, this thing looked like a broken mouse's leg. And I lit it and I took two puffs. Joe, do you remember a few years back when President Clinton said he smoked but he never inhaled, and right, we all called him a liar?
Yeah.
Well, Mr. President, I owe you an apology.
It can happen.
I coughed till I thought my liver was going to come out of my mouth. And so I flushed it down the toilet. I said, I'm not doing this. So I called the doctor the next day, and I told him, I said, what are you prescribing? I go, I'm almost coughed up blood. And he goes, oh, Bill, he goes, you were supposed to get the brownies. And I said, well, I saw them, but I thought that was just if you got the munchies. And he goes, no, the THC is it. So I go back and meet Peace or whoever the guy was that sold me this stuff. And so he sells me these brownies. Well, they're huge. Well, they don't have directions on them on how much are a dosage. You know, you only need like a corner of these things. Well, I didn't know that, so I ate the whole brownie, and everything was fine until 20 minutes later. I couldn't feel my body. And I'm laying on the floor because it was the only thing not moving. And my wife comes in, she goes, what are you doing? I go, have you seen my body? And she goes, yes. And I go, where is it? And she goes, it's attached to your head. And I go, no, it's not. I've looked. It's gone. And she goes, you're weird. And so I fell asleep, and I woke up with the worst headache. And it wasn't from the marijuana. It was because I slept on the floor for 16 hours.
Yeah, that'll do it.
And I walk upstairs, just wait. All I want is a cup of coffee. And I walk upstairs, and there's my wife laying on the dining room table drinking milk out of a carton. And I go, what are you doing? And she goes, where did you get these brownies? They're delicious. And I said, let me put on a Pink Floyd album. I'll tell you all about it.
Please tell me you have a new doctor.
I have a new doctor now, yes.
Yeah,
I called him up, and I said, I'm going back to the old-fashioned way, a Pabst Blue Ribbon and a shot of Jack Daniels. That'll help me sleep.
Do you find yourself, you know, a situation, you put yourself in a situation, do you just live your life unconsciously and looking at the humor later, or do you sort of deliberately think of situations that perhaps could be mined for comedy?
You know, I think it's probably a little bit of both, Joe. I don't walk around constantly going, ooh, I wonder if that's funny or if that's funny. You know, I think just after doing this for 30 years, I can kind of get an idea. Like, I'll give you an example. Like, something happened just the other day. As I'm getting older, my wife said, she goes, we need to get in shape, which, you know, I'm like, whatever. And so, so we're on what she calls this whole food diet. And it's like we go to farmers markets now, which is just not me. I love meat, you know. So, you know, of course, and now she's buying everything that, you know, broccoli and okra and beets. And I'm like, why don't we just call this the vomit diet? And so we're walking through this farmers market, and she goes, oh, look, there's two ladies selling homemade jam. And I went, well, jam, sugar, that's good. So we walk over, and this is where the material comes from. So I'm looking at these two women who were what I would call hippie women. Yeah. You know, they were wearing the tie-dye T-shirt dresses, and their heads were shaved, but they had hairy armpits. And I remember thinking to myself, are they dyslexic? But so we're standing there, and my wife goes, let's buy some jam. And all of a sudden it hits. I go, we cannot buy jam from these women. And I pulled Gail aside, my wife, and I said, we can't buy any jam. And she goes, why not? And I said, because we're going to buy a jar of jam, and I'm going to go home and make a piece of toast. And I'm going to take a spoonful of that jam, and the only vision in my head is going to be those hairy armpits. And I'm going to start making noises like the cat does when he has a fur ball. And so I look at, you know, like situations like I don't purposely try to put myself into these situations. But what I try to find is, would somebody else who had never been in a situation find this funny if I put, you know, like the other day I was going with back with this whole exercise thing. So she bought me a road bike. So I was like, all right, so I got the little goofy tight pants and the jersey and the helmet.
Quite a vision, Bill.
Yeah. So yeah. I go for a bike ride. I'm coasting down this hill, and the path curves to the left. And as I go around the corner, the bike hits a bump, and my hand slips off the handlebars, and I, what we call, yard sailed it. I mean, the bike, because your feet are locked into these stupid pedals. I hit so hard, it split the helmet in half. I could have been really badly hurt. But the whole time I'm laying on the ground, I thought, I envy fat people. They don't go through this because, you know what, they're just happy with their lives. They eat whatever they want, and they are happy as a lark. And here I am at 55 trying to be skinny. For what? It's not like they're going, you know, like Playgirl's going to come back and go, hey, we want Bill Engvall as a model. You know, it's like, so I sold the bike.
When you look at the at your career, as you say, you've been doing this for a long time. Can you, in retrospect, explain what happened with blue collar comedy and why that struck, and really paved success for all four of you?
You know, Joe, I think, of course, I can't speak for the other fellows, but I think when blue collar came out, I think it just touched a demographic that was largely overlooked by the media. And here you have four guys who are just four unassuming guys. I mean, not one of us was, you know, ever thought this is what we would probably end up doing for a living. But I think because of our style of humor and just the times at that when it hit, it just was the perfect storm. And it was just so much fun to be a part of. And, you know, someday when I have grandkids, you know, I'll be able to look at them and say, your granddaddy was part of the biggest comedy tour to ever hit this country in the history of comedy. I mean, there was nights, Joe, I remember when we were in Nashville and we set a record, we sold 18,000 tickets for a comedy night.
Mm.
And you know, when you walk out on stage in a crowd that big and they're screaming and cheering, I literally had to stand there for a second and I went, oh my God, this is as close to being a rock star as I'm ever going to get. And it was just an amazing ride. I mean, there was blue collar dolls, for God's sakes. I mean, that's just weird. But the thing that used to make us laugh was at the peak of this thing, people were like, hey, can we get backstage passes? Can we get back? I go, this ain't Aerosmith. This is four guys in a plate of cube cheese. That's all. That's what backstage is. There's not an open bar and chicks running around. It's like, it's me, Larry, Jeff, and Ron, and that's it. But, you know, there was times like, you know, like kids showing up dressed like we did, you know, like, and like Larry with sleeveless shirts. And I thought, oh God, make better choices in your life. You know, but people just loved it because I thought, you know, Jeff and I thought it would be successful, but we had no idea that this thing would get like it was. I mean, it spawned Blue Collar TV. And I will be honest with you, because of the Blue Collar Comedy Tour, you know, I can do this now just because I want to. You know, if I decide to retire, I'm fine.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, there was no more fun than being on the road with three guys like that. It was just as much fun as it looked like we were having. You could triple it.
It seems, and if without overanalyzing it, it seems that much of the reason that people would want to go backstage is because at the end of that show, when the four of you would just sit down and talk.
Mm-hmm.
It was well, hilarious, but it also was just so enjoyable. It seemed like you all just got along. It was a lot of fun, and maybe by going backstage, you would have a little more of that.
Well, you know what? To a man, everybody's favorite part of the show.
Yeah.
Just because that was who we were. I mean, and that's what we did when we weren't on stage. It was literally just, you know, and I learned real quick when we went up there at the very end, you better be on your A game because you'll get buried.
They were out for blood.
Oh, it was. And, of course, Larry was like the Mikey. You know, we always picked on him. but you know what? He could come right back at us. And it was just kind of, I always love that part, Joe, because I feel like, you know, sometimes you go to a concert and you don't know any more about the artist when you got there than when you left. And I feel like with our concerts, I felt like you walked out of there feeling like you kind of knew who we were. You know, like you go, these are just three regular dudes like I am. And we all understood that we did. We're four guys who got really lucky. We worked hard at what we did, but you know, it's at the end. And I think that one of the reasons is we'll all be just fine is because when this is all said and done, and it's going to end at some point, you know, all our careers, we just can move on. It's not like we got to, you know, not one of us. You know, sometimes you see these acts that you go, oh, dude, you should have quit a few years ago.
Right.
And we all know that. We know that time's coming. And we can all walk away from this going, we had the best time of our lives.
Bill Engvall will be at the Colonial Theater in Pittsfield Saturday night for two shows, 7:30 and 9:30. It's going to be a great evening of comedy. Bill, it's an absolute delight to talk to you. I wish you all the luck in the world, and I can't wait to have you here in the Berkshires.
Well, Joe, I got to tell you, they always say the good interviews go by too fast, and this one went by way too dang quick.
You're very, very nice. Thank you very much. We look forward to seeing you in Pittsfield.
You got it, buddy.
Thank you very much. Bill Engvall, again, will be at the Colonial Theater Saturday night, 7:30 and 9:30. You can find out more information by going to berkshiretheatergroup.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.